freedom in the defense of liberty is no vice.
Ich bin ein Violiner.
I do not regard existing conditions lightly.
Quote, unquote. We present another edition of the quiz game based on well-known sayings and some which haven't been said yet. It's devised and introduced by Nigel Rees.
Hello again.
In the dying world I come from, quotation is a national vice.
According to Evelyn Waugh, and quote, unquote, is the program designed to promote that national vice. And to help me do so, I have Ronald Fletcher, whose voice you've just heard, and on a return visit, a panel consisting of Michael Frayn, Germaine Greer, Jonathan Miller, and Ned Sherrin. And we begin with scrambled quotations, well-known sayings that have gone off a bit. I'd like you to identify the original quote, and if you know, tell me who messed it about. Ned Sherrin.
Matched by no marvel save in eastern scene, a rose-red city, half as gold as green.
I know Petra, rose-red city, half as old as time,
yes.
Which was the... Suppose it's supposed to be the only genuine line of poetry ever in a Newdigate poem, isn't it?
You're absolutely right as far as you've gone, Ned.
But that's not gone far enough, as usual.
That scrambling was done by the Reverend John William Bergen. He wrote A Rose Red City, half as old as time, in Petra. And the second half of his phrase is also a quotation from an earlier poem called Italy, A Farewell by Samuel Rogers. He wrote by many a temple half as old as time. And now, Jonathan, you're going to tell us who scrambled it.
Is it Sellers, in fact?
Yes.
Yes.
But
I mean, isn't it being done in one of the Goon shows?
No. In fact, it's from Balham Gateway to the South.
With Irene Handel, your favourite actress.
Yes, indeed.
Balham Gateway to the South, written by Frank Miordais Norton and Dennis Goodwin. And it was the voice of Peter Sellers as C. Quill Smith, Balham's own bard. Right, Michael Frayn.
They're rolling up the maps all over Europe. We shall not see them lit again in our lifetime.
The original quotation were something about rolling up the map of Europe, which was Chatham, wasn't it? The elder Pitt.
Well, in fact, it was the younger Pitt.
The younger Pitt, sorry.
Yes.
And the other quotation was the lights are going out all over Europe, which I think was the foreign minister on the outbreak of the First World War, Lord Grey.
Yes, Sir Edward Grey.
He certainly wasn't the Lord.
Wasn't he?
The Sir.
Sir Edward Grey.
Let's try and get some accuracy and scholarship into this program.
Right, said by Sir Edward Grey, the outbreak of the First World War, the lamps are going out all over Europe, we shall not see them lit again in our lifetime, and William Pitt the Younger, after hearing the news of the Battle of Austerlitz, said, roll up that map, it will not be wanted these 10 years. And the scrambling was done by...
Alan Bennett in...
In 40 Years On. Germaine Greer.
Earth has not anything to show or bear.
Find the stairs.
Earth has not anything to show or bear. Any more fairs.
I think it's scrambled Wordsworth.
Yes.
The sonnet from Westminster Bridge.
Okay.
And it's obviously been
scrambled
with the London Transport male
yes.
choir. I mean, I'm not allowed to say that, am I? In 1976, I've got to say people's choir.
Person's choir. Yes. Well, in fact, it was Flanders and Swan. Moving on to you, Jonathan Miller.
If by that me, sorry,
Shakespeare. Probably Kipling.
If by that you mean she dresses like her mother, yes, she does. But then all women dress like their mothers. That is their tragedy. No man ever does. That is his.
But it's scrambled Oscar Wilde from The Importance of Being Earnest.
Yes. Can you give me the what the original quotation was?
Algy speaking to John Worthington, and it's in the first act, and the line is, let me see now.
It's only last year, Jonathan.
I know, I can never remember the line. That's all. I cannot remember the accurate line. I really can't remember it. I'm sure Ned does know it. But
no, I didn't know, but I thought you had the feeling terribly well in the production.
That's what I thought, too.
I think you've got the general area. It, the original line is, all women become like their mothers rather than dress like their mothers. That is their tragedy. No man does. That's his. And the scrambling done by
Stoppard Travesties.
No, it wasn't.
No, I said by Bierbaum.
No, it was done by Alan Bennett yet again in 40 Years On.
Oh, yes, so it was.
Yes,
sorry, Alan.
No, no.
Like moving on. Sure it wasn't done as well by Tom Stoppard.
Well, perhaps it was, yes, maybe.
Had we better...
Alan Bennett gets points as the scrambler of the night.
Scramblers in the night.
Moving on. You should learn not to make personal remarks, said Alice to the Mad Hatter, but that's not diminished the tendency of people to say sharp things about each other, and in this round I'd like you to identify who said these things about whom. No, Tony.
He found her so different from her picture that he swore they'd brought him a Flanders mare.
Oh, it's Henry VIII about Anne of Cleves.
Absolutely right, reported in Smollett's History of England. Michael Crane?
Overpaid, overfed, oversexed, and over here.
It was said about the GIs during the war, but I thought it was just a popular...
Yes, it was.
One book ascribes it to Tommy Trinder, but right. I think it was a popular saying. Mm-hmm. That's what we always used to say at the time.
Germaine Greer.
The cutlery man, born with a silver spoon in his mouth, speaks with a forked tongue and knifes his colleagues in the back.
George Best. Michael Parkinson. Comes to the same thing.
Born with a silver spoon in his mouth. Offer it to the others. An answer came there, and it was said about the present Australian Prime Minister, Malcolm Fraser, and it was said by Bob Hawke, the President of the Australian Council of Trade Unions. Anyway, Jonathan Miller.
That garrulous monk.
A short one.
Different from a turbulent priest, presumably.
Yes.
No idea at all.
Offer it to the others? Michael Frayne?
Well, a pure guess. Is it Henry VIII and Sir Thomas More?
No, it's much more recent than that. It was Mussolini about Hitler. Mussolini and Hitler first met in Venice, of all places, in 1934. And at the end of the visit, Mussolini said about Hitler that he was that garrulous monk.
He didn't know about Eva Braun.
No, he didn't. Ned Sherrin, in a manner of speaking, this remark was never spoken.
A village tyrant.
No, but I don't know.
Fairly recent. Offer it to the others. Jonathan Miller.
Oh, I know it. The black man.
Mr. Amin.
It was by Idi Amin, by the gentleman who was arrested and to be shot. I forgot.
Hill.
Dennis Hills. Said about President Amin by Dennis Hills, who had to remove it from his autobiography in order to get out of Uganda. Michael Frayne, for you, a gentler personal remark.
The gods bestowed on... The gift of perpetual old age.
And there's someone who looked like an old man's a baby, someone who looked like a baby is an old man. No idea.
Offer it to the others?
Is it about Max Beerbohm? Is it about Max Beerbohm?
Yes, indeed. Said by?
Either Shaw or Wilde.
Oscar Wilde, yes, absolutely right. So you get marks. You get Michael's marks of that. Germaine Greer, a fictional remark.
Tell me, does the toppling of American missiles really compensate for having no hands?
Said to somebody rather nasty.
Who had no hands? I can't think of any nasty person who's got no hands. All the people I've met with no hands have been absolutely charming.
Well, you didn't obviously meet this one. I'll offer it to the others. Jonathan Miller.
I think that it comes from Stanley Kubrick's film about Dr. Strangelove, and that it's a remark made to Peter Sellers playing the part of the nuclear scientist with his mechanical hands.
Afraid it's not. Very nice idea. Those hands which kept jumping out.
I thought so too.
No, it's not. Offer it once again? No, in fact, it was said to Dr. No in the film Dr. No, said to him by James Bond. Jonathan Miller, a remark intended to be complimentary, I think.
The saucy feminist that even men like.
It's about Jilly Cooper.
No, I'll offer it to the others.
Well, I know.
All right. Why was it said about?
It was Life magazine talking about me.
You don't object to the sentiments?
Well, there's no sentiment there, is it? There's a misdescription. I mean, even men. I mean, men in preference to omnibuses or something. Even men like me. as well as cats and ants. And
all right, I'll give you one mark for getting that right about yourself. This is where we change the game round and get you to tell us what was really said in some famous situations. We throw it open to the whole panel. Henry II, it's supposed to have said, what we've already heard in the programme, about Thomas a Becket.
Who will rid me of this turbulent priest?
Right, now, any ideas?
I'll get that garrulous monk.
I think he probably said, grab him by the cloisters and cut off his cassocks.
All right, another Henry. Henry IV of France, or was it his minister Sully in conversation with him, is supposed to have said,
Paris is well worth a mass.
So let's do the whole show here.
You'd better explain that to the hapless listeners.
I'll let Jonathan do that.
No, I want an explanation of what? Of Henry IV's statement? Or
of where we are.
We are recording this in the Paris studio.
In the Paris cinema. Yes.
Sorry about that,
in
listeners.
In the heart of London's West End.
I have...
While bombs crump down upstairs.
Yes, various people, but especially Napoleon, have said...
England is a nation of shopkeepers.
But what did Napoleon really say, or did he say it, or what did he say?
Well, I'm pretty sure he didn't say the English are a nation of shopkeepers. I figure that what really happened is that he was being badgered by that Irish person who was doing the story of his exile in St. Helena. And what he actually said in a desperate attempt, because this Irish person had a smattering of English, as the Irish were apt to do, and he actually said to him, I'm very sorry, I can't give you an interview, because I must polish my collection of Scotch tipples. I think it's not less far-fetched.
So why shopkeepers? Why do you single out shopkeepers, I wonder?
Scotch tipples are what he calls. Yes.
Going back to this. That's what she said. Yeah. No, I was just going back to the original quotation. Why did he single out shopkeepers?
What was the French? Wasn't it boutiquier?
Yes.
Well, we've got me book here.
Except yes. He didn't say it, you see. Paoli is supposed to have said it to him in Italian.
All right, well, Ronald Fletcher's going to tell you what really happened.
Yes, and of course, Napoleon, he didn't say this at all. But he made one another very famous remark. An army marches on its stomach. That's why they've all got athlete's navel.
Think about it. To Galileo is attributed the remark which followed his recantation in 1632 with regard to his belief in the Copernican theory of the planets revolving around the sun.
E pur si muove, and still it moves.
But what did he really say? Was the Italian pronunciation all right there?
Absolutely frightful.
Sounds more like Luther, doesn't
it? Would you care to explain a bit about that, Ned?
Luther's movements? No, I wouldn't care. I think
they were following spaghetti immobilization experiments in Padua in the early 17th century. And there was a report to the Accademia del Cimento saying that despite all my methods, and still it moves. Tagliatelle less so.
Well, now, once again, it's time for titles. Titles of books, films, programs which have been drawn from quotations. And Ronald Fletcher will read you a description of the source of the quotation and of the work for which it's been used as the title. As soon as you think you know what the title is, leap in with your buzzer. Ronald?
Taken from a Shakespeare play with a distant setting, this phrase, spoken by a person of by no means humble birth to another woman, was used as the title of a musical about two Oxford graduates. The main characters of this second work are called Jane and Timothy. They were seen to do whatever it is they do with each other, first of all at Bristol in 1954. The show was written by Julian Slade and Dorothy Reynolds. The Shakespeare play...
Oh, thank goodness for that. Michael Frayn.
It was Saladay's.
Yes, where does the quotation come from?
From Antony and Cleopatra.
And Cleopatra talking about
Cleopatra. That's Cleopatra.
Yes.
Saying,
yes.
My salad days when I was green in judgment.
Cold in blood. Now another one.
Right, this quotation was used as the title of an American novel filmed in 1940 by Lewis Milestone. It's the story of a gentle but homicidal giant who has to be killed by his best friend. The quotation...
Ned Sherrin.
I only know the, I'm afraid, I only know the work of Steinbeck, which is Mice and Men. I don't know whence it comes, but somebody else is buzzed, and so Jonathan will know.
All right, well, Jonathan, Ned, you'll get one mark for Of Mice and Men by Steinbeck, and the other half is...
It's from Burns, The Best Laid Plans of Mice and Men, or Gang
Gang
Blaine.
Gang Aft
Yeah, to be absolutely precise, The Best Laid Schemes of Mice and Men, Gang Aft Glee.
Well,
how about that?
Yeah. They can devolve as much as they like.
The third one of these titles.
A line from a 19th century poet used as the title of a 20th century improbable farce. First of all said about one type of bird, it was used secondly about a bird of a very different feather. The first sang from heaven or near it, the second returned from heaven or near it.
Michael Friend?
Well, what sang from heaven or near it was the skylark.
Yes.
20th century farce.
I'm still trying to get the quotation.
L'Alouette.
Germaine Greer.
It's no coward's blithe spirit.
Absolutely right. And where does the quotation come from?
It comes from Shelley's ode to Skylark.
That's right. Hail to thee, blithe spirit.
Bird, thou never wert.
Oh, thou wert.
That from
I
heaven.
I am.
That from heaven or near it pourest thy full heart. Yes, absolutely right. And a final one.
Not so much a quotation, more a saying which deceives the ear. At bottom, it is a celebration of a part of the anatomy that might be mistaken by the innocent for a traveller's exclamation. It is currently the title...
Germaine Greer?
O Calcutta.
Yes, now then, explain about O Calcutta.
Well, I think it means O quelque tu as.
Which means?
Which refers to the author's fixation with the nates of the human female.
Yes. I think cool could delicately be described as the female French bottom, or indeed the... Any, you
the
know,
cool
any,
of her sack, yes, the bottom of her bag.
How many knew that? Au Calcutta meant au calcul tu as.
The wolf cubs over here knew all about it.
Yes, we have a party of 20 wolf cubs, they all knew it. Now we come to some quotations which are as famous or more famous in their quoted form as they are in their original form. That is to say, one person using a quotation and becoming famous because of it. I'd like to know who said them originally and by whom they were quoted. Ned Jones.
You have sat too long here for any good you've been doing. Depart, I say, and let us have done with you. In the name of God, go.
It's something like the rump of the Long Parliament, or something
yes.
of that ilk. Cromwell?
Yes. Now, who quoted it?
Oh, many people have quoted it since.
On a famous occasion. Down, Jonathan. Down.
Go on, Jonathan.
Ned's already got half of it. Well, he's... You're obviously a rather good team, because Ned gets the first half and Jonathan gets the second.
Or vice versa.
Or
we're
vice
very good friends. Hello, sailor.
Is it a rule of this game you must say hello, sailor, every week?
I'd rather you didn't.
We haven't spoken for years, actually. No. BBC's brought us together again.
Well, that's one of the things we
that's
do.
That's when people were beginning to comment
but
on
Jonathan, you...
Pantomime horsing it.
Jonathan, you seem to be wanting to finish off.
Oh, you want me to finish it? I'm sorry, I put my buzzer in the glass of water. It was said in 1940
yes.
To Neville Chamberlain.
Right.
And it was said by Arthur Henderson.
Michael Frayn.
Leo Amery.
Leo Amery. Yes.
I don't think I'll give Michael Frayn a mark. He's doing very well as it is. In fact, he's well out. Well, he's not. No, in fact, Germaine is leading at the moment. I must give credit where credit is due. But anyway, Jonathan, oh no, just give Ned one mark at the very start of that.
And he's Michael, leading.
What?
Did I not get any marks at all?
Oh, give him
just because I put my buzzer in the glass of water.
No, I'm afraid he came up.
I'll give you four marks, panel, and you can divide them among yourselves as you will. All right. Michael Frayn, for you, a recording.
Sail on, O ship of state. Sail on, O union, strong and great. Humanity, with all its fears, with all the hopes of future years, is hanging breathless on thy fate.
Well, certainly Churchill saying it there. He must have been quoting... Is it the American poem celebrating the Republic?
Fellow. The American fellow.
By Whitman, Walt Whitman.
No, it wasn't actually. Yeah. In fact, it's a triple quotation. It is Winston Churchill quoting from a letter from President Roosevelt, who himself was quoting from Longfellow's The Building of the Ship, and Churchill used the quotation in a broadcast addressed to Roosevelt in February 1941, which included the request, give us the tools and we will finish the job. Germaine Greer.
As I look ahead, I'm filled with foreboding. Like the Roman, I seem to see the river Tiber foaming with much blood.
Tommy Doherty. Well, he might have said it.
I'll offer it Jonathan Miller.
It is, in fact, Enoch Powell having one of his night sweats. And he's quoting one of his favorite Latin authors, possibly Virgil, but I don't...
Yes, it was Virgil. This was Enoch Powell in his famous or infamous speech on immigration delivered in Birmingham in April 1968, quoting from the sixth book of Virgil's Aeneid, Et tibrim multo spumantem sanguino cerno. Sanguina cerno.
Will have gone down very well in Birmingham. Virgil stands in Birmingham.
You've no idea how long it took me to find out where it came from. Jonathan Miller.
And I said to the man who stood at the gate of the year, give me a light that I may tread safely into the unknown. And he replied, go out into the darkness and put your hand into the hand of God. That shall be to you better than light and safer than a known way.
I really haven't the faintest idea at all. I really can't even begin to think.
I'll offer it to the others.
I think it was Churchill, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't. It was quoted by King George VI in his Christmas broadcast in 1939, and the original words are by Minnie Louise Haskins, who I'm sure you all know. Let me just look at the score. I want to give the score because I'm able to say that Germain Greer is right out in front with 14, and Jonathan has 11, and Michael 10, and Ned has got 9.
Wish I had been counting.
Now, to catchphrases, mostly, let it be said, from shows no longer with us. For you, Ned Sherrin.
Sock it to me, sock it to me, sock it to me, sock it to me, sock it to me.
And now, folks, it's sock it to me time.
That was from an American spin-off of That Was the Week That Was, called Laugh It.
Oh, ho, ho. Why do you say spin-off?
Well, because it was.
Really?
In what sense?
Like Concord is a spin-off of the Tiger Moth Dog.
Yes, it was Rowan and Martin's Laughing, and who was the girl who used to say that?
Yeah, I think it's Judy Kahn, yes, who used to be married to Burt Reynolds, isn't it?
Really?
That should catch me up with the rest of the... That should catch me up with the rest of the team, shouldn't it?
Yes. Michael Friend.
No, but seriously, he's doing a grand job.
What is it? That was the week that was.
Indeed it was. It was the sort of standard remark after attacks had been made on people.
It wasn't actually, I mean, we eschewed, it did come from That Was the Week, but we eschewed the catchphrase on That Was the Week, and it was in fact used, I think, 5 times, but it did have enormous potency and so has been well remembered.
Yes.
Enormous potency, gosh, and Burt Reynolds, gosh, gee whiz.
Wonderful how you connect Burt Reynolds with enormous potency.
Well, I thought Judy Kahn so little, I was still staggered.
Well, he's quite short, actually. I went up in a lift with him at the Algonquin, he is quite small.
Was he wearing his rubber jacket?
He was wearing his own hair.
Where?
In the lift.
Jonathan Miller, you're looking as if you've got nothing to say.
No, I... He was in America at the time.
Love the contest here.
It's not a really contest. I don't know where it began. Anyway. I'm so scared of what's coming next. Help, do it, Tommy!
All right, here it comes, Germain Greer.
And if chickens could lay golden eggs every day, then the breakfast would never be done. But it never could be still, you've got to agree, it's a good idea.
Sir! Mother Goose.
Son would be called Colin.
I have to. Do you, any idea?
It's the singing person was Maxwell Bygraves.
Maxwell Bygraves, indeed, yes. It was his catchphrase. Jonathan Miller, a catchphrase for you.
Can I do you now, sir?
Oh. Ah, and here we are in the Paris cinema. But that's Dorothy Summers playing Mrs. Mopp.
In
It Mopp.
Yes. Correct. Which I think some of which was recorded in this very studio, yes. Well done. I'm just looking at the marks now. And Germaine is still way out in front. Right.
How do you do this? What sort of arithmetic is this? I don't feel way out in front.
Finally, as usual, we swap things round and invite your panel to manufacture some quotations appropriate for meetings between some famous people, which never in fact took place. First, what did Enoch Powell say to Lord Baden-Powell, or vice versa?
Oh, God. It's impossible to approach this one without a mixture of of chestnuts and bad tastes. I suppose that Enoch said to Lord Baden-Powell, if you rub, saving the presence of the wolf cubs, if you rub two boy scouts together, you'll end up in the News of the World.
Yes, I would imagine Enoch Powell probably started quoting Virgil. Ronald, do you know?
I do indeed.
Yeah,
yes, BP said to Enoch, who was dressed incredibly as a boy scout, tell me, my boy, have you heard of Mafeking? And Enoch replied, yes, sir, and I find it a great relief.
What was said when Charles Darwin met the Loch Ness Monster?
Nothing was said at all, apparently.
Finally, what was said when Henry Ford met President Ford, or vice versa?
I know that history is bunk, but this is ridiculous.
And so, in fact, we, with all these brilliant suggestions for remarks, we come to the end of this week's edition of Quote Unquote. Let me just have a look at the score. And yes, Germaine is still way out in front. way out in front by one mark. I just say that. I'll leave you this week with this saying. I can't tell you who it's by, but I'd be delighted to know. The person who described opera as when you go into a theatre at 7 o'clock in the evening, listen to 3 hours of profound music, and then look at your watch and find it's only 7:15. Goodbye.
Taking part this week in Quote Unquote were Michael Frayn, Germaine Greer, Jonathan Miller and Ned Sherry. The quotations were read by me, Ronald Fletcher. The program was devised and introduced by Nigel Rees and produced by John Lloyd.